Okay, Chodesh Tov, everyone. Thank you very much, Rabbi Sinno Zarafsky, for inviting me to share some words of Torah with you this morning. Before we begin, first of all, I just want to say good morning to my mother, who's joining us this morning on my birthday. So thanks for coming, Mom. It's okay. I reminded you, subtly. I also want to dedicate this year. Tonight is the shloshu of my wife's uncle, Rabbi Yechiel Eckstein, Yechiel Tzvi ben Rav Shimon Aryeh Leib. So this is in his memory as well. And also for Refuah Shleimah for Leah Rachana, Bat Shulamit Nechama. When we think about the mitzvos of Adar, we generally focus primarily on Purim, Mishloach Manot, Matano Lev Yonim, Kriyat HaMegillah, etc. And there are a couple things, a couple inyanim of Adar that sometimes get pushed to the periphery. So I thought today would be a good opportunity. We have enough time to Purim. I'm sure you're going to concentrate on a lot of the halachot of Purim to discuss some of those peripheral, I don't know if that's the appropriate way to call them, but the peripheral inyanim of Purim. So I wanted to speak about the Arba Parshiot, the four Parshiot that we read, which we'll discuss in just a moment. I wanted to speak a bit about Ta'anit Esther. And the last issue is the Minhag of Machatzit HaShekel. So let's begin with the Arba Parshiot. This is in source one on your sheets. The source sheet is a bit ambitious, I admit. I don't know if we can cover 32 sources in the 45 minutes that we have. So I'll just summarize some of them as we go along, but feel free to look them over yourself. So we'll move quick, but I'll speak slowly. So we'll start with the Mishnah Brura. The Mishnah Brura begins by summarizing for us this idea, this concept of the Arba Parshiot. And this is what he says in source number one. Eva'er b'kitzur inyan dalet parshiot. Let's talk about these four parshiot that we have every Adar. We have to pay attention to some keywords over here because they're going to come up again. He says, Chazal tiknu, so now we know something about them. It's a takana of Chazal. Likrot dalet parshiot bashana, to read these four parshiot each year, Mirosh Chodesh Adar, Adosh Chodesh Nisan. So just from those, that short sentence, we learn a lot about the Arba Parshiot. It's Takana of Chazal to read these Arba Parshiot at a specific time. Then he goes on and he says at the end of the first line, Lizichron Dalet Dvarim, to remind us of three things, of four things, Behem Elun. This is what they remind us of. Harishona, he Parshat Shkalim, that was last week. The first one of these Parshiot that we read is Parshat Shkalim. We have a special Maftir and Haftorah at the end of the parsha that we read last week for Parshat Shkalim. Arishona y Parshat Shkalim lizichron mitzvat machatzit shekel, to remind us of the mitzvah machatzit shekel. Shitaber b'samuch, which he'll explain later on, and we'll discuss it also in some depth hopefully later on. Shayu mechuyavim liten lishkal korban tamid b'chol shana. So Parshat Shkalim reminds us of the obligation that we had during the times of the Beit HaMikdash to give money, a tax, give money to the Beit HaMikdash for the korban tamid. That's Shkalim. Hashnia, what's the second one of the Dalet Parshiot? He Parshat Zachor. That's next Shabbos we have. The Parshat Zachor, Liskor, to remind us, Maaseh Amalek, what Amalek did to us. V'korin motav b'Shabbat shlifnei Purim, and we always read that the Shabbos before Purim. Lisamcha, to juxtapose it, L'maaseh Shayam Mizera Amalek, to remind us what happened with Amalek, U'kedei l'hakadim zichirat mechiyat Amalek l'asiyata, also to put it next to Purim, to remind us. We have to remember Amalek, and then we have to recall what happened on Purim with Amalek Haman, uchediktiv v'hayamim ha'ele niskarim v'na'asim. So that's Shkalim and Zachor. Hashlishit, what's the third one of these Dalet Parshiot that we read? Hi Parshat Parah, Parshat Parah Duma. V'hi b'Shabbat shekodem Parshat HaChodesh. We read that almost at the end of Adar, but not quite at the end. Shekein hi Sreifata b'midbar samuch l'nisan. Parshat Parah, we know the Parah Duma was slaughtered and then it was burned, and the ashes are used as part of the purification process. So we would burn the para and the minbar, they burn it in Nisan, kedei lahazot at Yisrael be'afar hachatat miyad achar hakamat mishkan, in order for us to be purified in the desert before the first Pesach, kedei shu torim v'yuchlu lahazot ha-Pesach bizmano, in order for us to be mekayim the mitzvah korban Pesach at the appropriate time. So we read Parshat Para to not only remind us of the Para in the Midbar, but also to kind of encourage us to daven. That even this year, Bezrat Hashem, this year, we'll have a Paraduma, we'll burn the Paraduma, we'll be purified through the Paraduma, and we'll celebrate Pesach as it should be. Harvi'it, what's the fourth one of these Dalet Parshiot? Parshat HaChodesh. It is the Shabbat immediately before Rosh Chodesh Nisan, b'Shabbat ha-samuch l'Rosh Chodesh Nisan, k'dei l'kadesh Chodesh Nisan. So we read Parshat HaChodesh in order for us to sanctify Chodesh Nisan. D'chtiv b'Torah, HaChodesh is Elechem, Rosh Chodeshim. Nisan is the first one of the months, if you're counting from Nisan. Then the Mishnah Berurah points out, "Avein ze ikara kiddush ki ikara kiddush ubeit rita alavana." Okay, fine. So we have here arba parshiot that the Mishnah Berurah told us about, which we know there is a Takanav Chazal, Shkalim, Zachor, Parah, and Achodesh. So if we stop right now and just looked at what the Mishnah Berurah told us, would we assume that women are chayav be'arba parshiot or not? What would we assume? Just based upon what the Mishnah Berurah said, let's review. Takanat Chazal, to read it bashana, me'rosh chodesh adar ad rosh chodesh nisan. So first of all, we see it doesn't sound like it's mitzvah mid'oraita, Takanat Chazal. Also, the Mishnah Berurah pointed out that the Chazal gave us a specific time frame where we should be performing the mitzvah. So you look at this and you would have to say, you'd want to say that it's a mitzvah taseish azman grama. It's a time-bound mitzvah. You must read that these parshiot during a specific time frame. And we know, b'derech klal, generally speaking, nashim ha'piturot mitzvah taseish azman grama. Women don't have to be mekayem mitzvah taseish azman grama. You can. It's nice if you shake a lulav. You don't have to. It's nice if you sit in a sukkah. You don't have to. So you look at the arba parshiot and you would say, don't have to. So that's an approach. However, if we look at just two of these parshiot, if we look at Zachor and Parah, perhaps we're going to see that it's not so simple to say that women are Peturot. So let's begin with Zachor. That's probably the more famous one. So if you look at source number two, which comes from Parsha Kitetze, the Torah tells us about the obligation to remember Amalek. And the truth is it's a mitzvah ase and a lo tase. Let's take a quick look. Number two, Zachor et asher asa lecha Amalek baderech betzidchem mitzrayim. Recall what Amalek did to you as you were leaving Egypt. Asher karacha baderech. They attacked the rear, and Amalek was not fearful of God. They attacked us from behind. Very tricky for us. When we get to Eretz Yisrael, we have to remember what happened to them. We must destroy Amalek after we make ourselves a Yerusha in Eretz Yisrael. We have to totally destroy Amalek. So if you look there, we have two different mitzvot. Pasuk Yitzayin says Zachor, it's a positive commandment to remember. And in the last Pasuk Yitzayin, the last two words, Lo Tishkach, it's a mitzvot Lo Tasei. So we are obligated to remember what Amalek did to us, and also we can't forget it. Just to keep that in mind, there are two different aspects of this mitzvah. So certainly, if you look just at these Pesukim, does the Pesukim seem to give us any sort of time frame when we have to be Mekayim this mitzvah? Not at all. So at least from the Pesukim, it does jump out on us to suggest that perhaps it's not so simple to say that Parshat Zachor is a mitzvah taseh she'azman grama, might be a mitzvah taseh she'ein hazman grama, might be a mitzvah that's not time-bound. And if it's a mitzvah that's not time-bound, then women would be chayiv. And the truth is, the Sefer Chinuch in source number 3 says basically the same thing. We'll look very quickly. The Sefer Chinuch himself says, I don't know if this is set time for this. So again, highlighting that idea that it could very well be that Parshat Zachor is a mitzvah taseh she'ein hazman grama. Then we find something very interesting. Look at number 4. The Sefer Chinuch himself, who just mentioned above that there's no specific time frame for Zechirat Amalek, he says as follows. This is very interesting. Look at number 4 with me. This mitzvah of Zechirat Amalek v'noheget mitzvah zu b'chol makom u'b'chol zman. It's interesting. You are required to fulfill this mitzvah anywhere and all the time, b'zecharim, for males, because the men are the ones who are going to go out to battle. The men are the ones who are going to go out and fight the war against Amalek. And then he says, lo benashim, but not women. What's going on? How does the Sefer Chinuch, I don't want to say backtracks, but first he says, it's mitzvah sheish ein hazman grama. And then he says, women are pater. So why are women pater? So the Sefer Chinuch himself mentions, because the men go out to war, the women don't go out to war. So what he does basically is, he's connecting the obligation to battle against Amalek with the obligation to remember Amalek. That's very interesting. It's very interesting because it makes two assumptions which might not necessarily be correct. One assumption that it makes is that there's necessarily a connection between the obligation to fight Amalek and the obligation to remember Amalek. And not everyone agrees with that. Some people say, okay, there is an obligation to destroy Amalek. That's one mitzvah. But there's also a mitzvah, least kor Amalek. That's what the Pesukim are telling us. So many Mepharshim suggest that you can't say the women are pater, certainly according to the rationale of the Sefer Chinuch, because it might not be true that there's a connection between the obligation to destroy Amalek and the obligation to remember Amalek. But there's even a better response, there's even a clearer response, I think, to the Sefer Chinuch, and that's brought down by the Minchas Chinuch, the commentary on the Sefer Chinuch. Look at source number 5. We'll just go quickly to the underlined part. Is underlined in your in yours yours as well? Yeah, number five. He says as follows: Umashikatav ki lehem lasot al mechama v'lo l'nashim. So when the Sefer Chinuch wrote that men are chayev in zechirat Amalek and not women because women don't go out to war, says the Sefer Chinuch be'emet milchamat mechemet mitzvah. This is a mechemet mitzvah. We are commanded to destroy Amalek. And we know the Gemara tells us that for a mechemet mitzvah, hakol yotzin, everyone goes out to fight, afilu kalami chupata. So said the Sefer Chinuch, said Minchas Chinuch, how could you say women are potter from the war against the Amalek? It's a mechemet mitzvah. And a mechemet mitzvah, even kalami chupata have to go out. A lot of people use this Minchas Chinuch sheet to discuss women in the army today. That's certainly beyond the scope of our conversation. But it's interesting that we can see a mechemet mitzvah, women are chayav to fight. So when what the Sefer Chinuch originally said that women are potter because they're not chayav to fight against the Amalek, that could very well not be true. It could be women are chayav to fight against the Amalek. It's a mechemet mitzvah, so therefore they'd be chayav in the zechira. Therefore, he says at the end of Sefer Chinuch, at the end of source number five, by the underline, v'nira dekol ishe Yisrael chayavim bo kumo mitzvah taseish en azman grama. Therefore, he says kol ishe, every Jew, man, woman, doesn't matter. Every Jew seems to be chayav in the mitzvah of zechirat Amalek, without exception. So what we've basically done is that although the Mishnah Berurah told us that these four parshiot are atakanav chazal, meaning midrabanan, and they should be done as in a specific time frame, that's not the whole picture. Because we see that zachor is a mitzvah de'oraita, and there seems to be no specific time frame. That's why I believe, you can correct me if I'm wrong, I think the predominant minhag is for women to go here zachor in shul. Is that correct? Yeah? And in many shuls, even that I know in where I live, in my shul, that that there's another extra reading of zachor after shul. Number six just highlights this point as well. Yesh omrim she parshat zachor parshat para duma chayv mikot midoraita. Some people say, which we've seen already, that parshat zachor and parshat para are really midoraita. Lefikach bnei yishuvim she'im lehem minyan tzrichim lavo lemakom she'ish minyan b'shabbatot halalu, etc. So the Shulchan Aruch says this idea as well, that it's a mitzvah midoraita, which women seemingly would be chayav to follow. So what happens if a woman isn't able to make it to shul? She can't make it to shul that morning. She can't go to the minyan afterwards. So what are you going to do about it? So Magen Avraham makes a couple of good suggestions. One is that the Torah reading, the Kriyat HaTorah on Purim morning, by Vayavo Amalek, is also a way you can fulfill the chiyuv of Zechirat Amalek. So if someone can't make it to shul for whatever reason, they can fill it there. Also, another option is that when we read Parsha Ki Teitzeh later on, right after the summer, and as we're reading Parsha Ki Teitzeh, where the Pesukim of Amalek come in, that's also a way to do it. It's almost every year in Shalvim for women, our first Shabbaton, the first Shabbat of the year, falls out of Parsha Ki Teitzeh. So before the Aliyah of Amalek, we always clap on the bima and we say, anyone who wasn't able to go to shul and didn't have a mind on Amalek, now is an opportunity you can be mekayem the mitzvah as well. But then you can ask, you know, if it's not a mitzvah to say shazman grama and women are chai, why do I have to go to shul at all? Why can't I sit, open up my Koran, OU Tanakh, sit down and just read it in my living room? Why do I have to go to shul to hear anything about Amalek? So the Mishnah Berurah does point out in number seven, the reason why you have to go to shul is dichtiv zachor et asher asav v'garminim b'gemara. The Gemara teaches us to hai zachor hainu ba'amira mitoch ha-sefer dafka, that you have to hear the Amalek at least, you know, sometime from a Sefer Torah. It's a mitzvah that must be done from the Torah, and the person who's reading the Torah has to have in mind to help you fulfill your mitzvah, and you have to have in mind to fulfill the mitzvah with his reading. So what we've seen basically up to this point is that although at first glance we might suggest that Parshat Zachor is Takan of Chazal to be read during a specific time frame, we see that no, it's actually very, very likely mitzvah d'oraisa that women are chayav as well, and that's the minhag I think Ashkenazim and Sfardim are makpid to try to hear Parshat Zachor in shul. Parshas Parah is a very, very short discussion. As we saw in the Shulchan Aruch, there's definitely a rationale to suggest that Parshas Parah is also mitzvah d'oraisa. I just took the pasuk which highlights the point, but it's the beginning of Parshat Chukat. In number eight, the Torah tells us at the end of that discussion of the Parshat Parah, v'chibes ha'osev et efer ha'parat v'gadav, person who gathered up the ashes of the para, but tameh the arav, and he's tameh by tal of Israel, and it's for the Jews lager hagar betocham lechukat olam. When it said this is a chukat olam, an everlasting chok, again that implication would be number one, it's a mitzvah midoraita, whatever that means for us here, and it's chukat olam. What does chukat olam mean? It's a chok for olam. What is olam? Eternity. So certainly, if you look at Parshat Parah as well, it seems to be that Parshat Parah could very well be also a mitzvah midoraita, also a mitzvah tasei she'ein hazman grama, not a time-bound mitzvah where women would be chayiv. The Mishnah Berurah writes us in number 9, we just turned the page. Some people objected, say, no, it's not midoraita, etc. So we can go in either direction. Maybe it's midoraita, maybe it's not midoraita. I think there are some women, again, you can correct, you know much more about this than I do. I think there are women who have the minhag to try to go to shul and parashat para as well because they're concerned that maybe it's a mitzvah midoraita. I think most people do not. If you miss it, you have the opportunity to go back in parashat chukat here then as well, just like parashat yitetzei v'zachor. So just to keep that in mind, when next week with Parsha Zachor, that minhag to go to shul for women, and now if we didn't know before, now we know why. We know why because it could very well be a mitzvah midoraita, the women are chayiv, because mitzvah of mechiyah and zechira are not connected, or because even you as women, you have the obligation to fight against the malach because it's a mechemes mitzvah. Okay, we're good. Questions before we move on? All right, yes. Yeah, so it's not that the theme of para relates to women. It's that when we discuss obligation for women to be mekayim mitzvot in general, any mitzvah that's time-bound, women are patur, any mitzvah that's not time-bound, there is a chiyuv, women are chayav. So it sounds like parshat para is not necessarily time-bound. So if it's not time-bound, women have to be mekayim the mitzvah. So again, like lulav and sukkah, the reason why women don't have to be mekayim the mitzvah is because it's time-bound. This is not a time-bound, could be not a time-bound mitzvah. So we have to be chayv. Also, I mean, it's an important part of the tahara process before we hit Pesach. But in general, it's the possibility that women have to be mekayim this mitzvah is because it's very possibly a mitzvah midoraita, a Torah mitzvah that's not time bound. Where is that? Shkalim and hachodesh. Absolutely, those are takanot chazal, no doubt about it. There's no chiyuv, as far as I know. There's no chiyuv for women to go to shul. It's nice. There's no chiyuv for women to go to shul for shkalim and for chodesh because no one suggested they're midoraita. It's Zachor, which is many people believe it's midoraita, and Para could be. That makes sense. Okay. All right, let's move on to the next inyan, our next issue here. This is like three mini shiurim. The next inyan is Ta'anit Esther. So when we think about what Ta'anit Esther is, what Ta'anit Esther reminds us of, so certainly what we've learned and what could very well be the case, we assume Ta'anit Esther reminds us of the three-day fast that Esther and her na'arot, that they completed before she went over to speak with Achashverosh. That's what we would assume. That the Pesukim seem to say this as well. Look at number 10, we're in Esther Perek Dalid. Leich kenos et kol ha-yehudim ha-nimtzim b'shushan. So go gather all the Jews. V'tzamu elai, v'al tochlu v'al tishtu shloshet yamim. Don't eat the 3 days. Yomam v'layla v'yom, sorry, shloshet yamim, layla v'yom, gam ani v'narotayatzum. I'm also going to fast. Kein uvechein avo el ha-melech asher lo chedat v'chasher avarati. She says, I'm going to fast 3 days. You should fast 3 days. Let's all fast 3 days before I go in to meet Achashverosh. Vayavru, that's an important word. We'll speak about that in just a moment. Yedzayin vayavor Mordechai vayas k'chol asher tzivta alav Esther. And that's what Mordechai did everything that Esther commanded her. So we see that there was a three-day fast. That sounds like everyone partook in prior to Esther going to meet Achashverosh. And most of us, you know, have learned that that's what Ta'anit Esther is all about. And look at number 11, just to towards the end of the Sefer, when it speaks about the institution of Purim, Vayishlach Sfarim El Kol HaYudim El Sheva V'Esrimu Me'am Medina Machut HaChashverosh Divrei Shalom Be'emet. So the Sfarim was sent out to all of the Medinot of HaChashverosh, all of the provinces. And what did it say in those letters? L'Kayem Et Yimei HaPurim Ha'Ela Bizmaneihem, that we should fulfill the mitzvahs of Purim on their right day. Kasher kiem aleim Mordechai Yehudi v'Esther Malka, just like Mordechai and Esther did. Kasher kimu al nafsham v'al zaram. And that's the way that their generations should do that and how their generations did do it. Divrei hatzomot v'za'akatam, the days of fasting and prayer, of yelling out. So in Lamed Aleph, the Pasuk seems to say that part and parcel of the holiday of Purim is Ta'anit Esther. Okay, so what we see in number 10, which we saw before, is that Esther fasted for 3 days. And what we see in number 11, and the fast of Purim, which we're going to assume at least at this point is the fast of Esther, is part and parcel of the Purim holiday. The kayemet me'a Purim ha'ela, to be mekayem these days, divrei atzmot v'zakatam, the days of fasting, the days of tefillah. Okay, so we have a package over here. We have Purim, which includes the fast days. Look at number 12. The Rambam writes as well. V'nahagu kol Yisrael bizmanim elu. And we have a minhag during these times. Hitanot b'shlosha asar ba'adar, to fast on the 13th day of Adar. Zechil ta'anit shitanu b'imei Haman. To remind us of the fasting that we did in the days of Haman. As the pasuk says, divrei hatzamot v'zakatam, days of fasting and days of tefillah. So up to this point, we're still good. We still think, we have no reason to doubt that the fast that we're having for Ta'anit Esther is the fast reminding us and remembering the three-day fast that Esther and seemingly all the Jews participated in. However, some people suggest that's not so simple. Some people suggest that perhaps we're mistaken. Perhaps Ta'anit Esther, what we have on Yud Gimel Adar, is not necessarily related to that three-day fast that Esther undertook. And it all begins with the Gemara, number 13, Talmud Bavli, Masechet Megillah, Daf Tet Vav, Amud Aleph. We saw back in number 10, at Pasuk Yud Zayin, Vayavor Mordechai passed. It's a weird language. What does it mean, Mordechai passed? What did he pass? What did he pass up on? So number 13, the Gemara says, Vayavor Mordechai, what happened? Amar Rav. Rav says, She'evir Yom Rishon Shal Pesach B'Ta'anit. Mordechai passed through the first day of Pesach while he was fasting. Very interesting. That's why Rashi explains in number 14 that Yom Tov Rishon Shal Pesach Shari B'Shloshas Esra B'Nisan Nechtuva Yigrod B'Nitan Hadad B'Shushan. Rashi points out, according to that Gemara, that the actual time when Esther fasted was not right before the war, not right before the victory. So we assume, because we read it so fast, we assume that everything happened like over the course of a three-day period of time. Very, very long. Months and months passed over the Purim story. It's a very long, very protracted amount of time. So the Gemara points out that the three-day fast that Esther fasted was really 2 days before Pesach, Erev Pesach, and the first day of Pesach. So if you really want to be Mekayim Ta'anit Esther, the fast that Esther fasted, it would have made much more sense to fast Pesach time. When I showed my wife this Gemara, she suggested maybe we should look into if there's a connection between Ta'anit Esther and Ta'anit Bechorot. I don't know, but if anyone's here, it's very interesting to think about if there's any connection between them. Anyway, so what we do see is it's very possible that if we really wanted to have Ta'anit Esther, we'd be fasting Pesach time. So one thing we can say is that's okay, no big deal. We're trying to, keep the holiday together. We're trying to compact a lot of days within a very short amount of time. So okay, it's fine. So the fast that we have on Yud Gimel Adar can still be Ta'anit Esther. We're not going to fast Pesach time because that's crazy. Well, what we are going to do is we're going to fast the day before Purim, Yud Gimel Adar, and it's going to be Ta'anit Esther. It's going to be the fast of Esther. Fine. However, the Beit Yosef quotes opinion that says not so fast. Maybe it's not so simple to suggest that. And he says, we're not going to read it inside, we'll just say it outside. He says that, Kos Meforshim would say that there's for sure another fast that happened during the time of Purim. This is what he says. He says, could it be that all of Bnei Israel, with their life at risk, going out to fight against all their enemies, could it be that they didn't spend a day beforehand fasting and doing tshuva before they fought? It can't be. So Meforshim explained that the day before Purim, the day before the victory, all of Bnei Israel fasted and did tshuva. Those are the days of Divrei Hatzamot v'Zaakatam, the days of fasting, the day of prayer, as we're about to go out to war. I hope we'll be okay. I hope I have the zuchuyot to fight against my enemy and be victorious. So all of Bnei Israel stopped and they fasted the day before Purim to ensure that spiritually they maybe physically be a little bit weaker, but that spiritually they'd be strong enough and up to the task of fighting against their enemies. So many people suggest that the Ta'anit Esther that we actually have, although we call it Ta'anit Esther, the fast of Esther, it's more of like Ta'anit Purim. It is a fast reminding us of the Purim experience. And that's why it does make a little sense when we say it's all part and parcel of a bigger picture. It's all part and parcel of, of the Purim story. The Purim story isn't just about the victory, it's about the possibility of defeat. I think it was Kurt Vonnegut, he has this interesting essay about the different formats of a story. So one he calls is the man in a hole. What's the man in a hole format? He says there are like three or four, seven or eight formats you could find in any good story. So he says the man in the hole theory is that, a good story is everything's fine, everything's bad, everything's fine. Right? And every movie is like that. Has the girl, loses the girl, gets the girl, has the money, loses the money, gets the money. And he says, that's what makes a good story. And so you could suggest that the reason why we have to have the fast day connected to the days of Purim is because it's part of the story. You know, what would the story of Purim be if there wasn't a up, down, up? So it could be the reason why that is all connected, all brought together, is because it's part of a greater story. Now, the importance of that approach, saying it's part of a greater story, is that when we reevaluate Ta'anit Esther, it's not like a classic Ta'anit. Most Ta'aniyot, the Rambam tells us, are days of tshuva, days of tefillah. Now, I'm not saying don't do tshuva and tefillah on Ta'anit Esther. That's not what I'm saying at all. But perhaps Ta'anit Esther is a different sort of framework. Ta'anit Esther is a fast day, but really part of a happy day. So it's a bit different than a classic fast day. So is that, do we see that anywhere in halacha? Is there any nafkamina? Is there any practical difference between a fast day being a fast day of tshuva and tefillah and crying, and a fast day being a fast day for more of a simcha-oriented fast day? So we do see something very interesting. If you look at me at number 16, Shulchan Aruch writes, this is something very interesting. Mit'anin b'yogim ba'adar, we fast on the 13th day of Adar, v'imchal purim v'echad b'shabbat, and if Purim falls out on Sunday, which means Ta'anit Esther would be on Shabbos, we can't fast on Shabbos. Makdimim hitano biyom chamishi. So we, instead of fasting on Shabbos, or maybe pushing off everything a couple days, we fast earlier. We fast on Thursday. So Ta'anit Esther falls out on Shabbos, Yud Gimel's on Shabbos, so we can't fast on Yud Bet, we're not going to fast on Friday. So we push the fast back, and we fast on Thursday. Now that's a big chiddush, that's very interesting. Because the Gemara tells us, number 17, that in general, akdumei puranut lom... We don't fast earlier. If there's a puranot, if there's a problem, if there's an issue, we don't want to take it upon ourselves earlier. That's why we know this year and last year, Shivasar B'Tammuz is on Shabbos. So when do we fast? Sunday. Tisha B'Av is going to fall out on Shabbos. When are we going to fast? Sunday. We never want to have difficult days earlier. But Ta'anit Esther, we do. We're not concerned about that. Why is that? Because Ta'anit Esther is not a puranut, perhaps. Perhaps it's not a day, you know, crying out of tefillah and tzaka. It's a day of, we're fasting, but it's a commemoration of a greater whole experience of the simcha. I mean, what do? We spend all day, I mean, I don't know, my house, spend all day wrapping up shalchmanos, and, you know, it's getting the kids' costumes together and, like, you know, getting ready for Purim. It's we're fasting, but it's more of a fast day with elements of simcha woven in for sure. So that's, I think, that's one nafkamin, one practical difference between Ta'anit Esther and all other fasting that is kind of outside the framework. And that number one is that we kind of pull it back a little bit. Another difference between Ta'anit Esther and other fast days is that we're much more lenient. If people have issues and difficulty fasting, and generally speaking, poskim are much more lenient. Certainly women who are pregnant, women who are nursing, people who are sick, no question. But even in certain situations, we're even more lenient with Ta'anit Esther because, again, it's not the framework of a regular fast day. We can skip number 18 because just the psukim that I mentioned before, but there's one other very cool, addition we can make to this idea that Ta'anit Esther is not like a regular fast day. So if you look at number 19, the Rambam says as follows. Kol Hatzomot Ha'ilu, this is at towards the end of the Chol Ta'anit, he's speaking about all the fast days, Shavuot Tammuz, Tisha B'Av, Asar B'Teves, etc. Kol Hatzomot Ha'ilu, Atidim libatel yimot haMashiach. All these fast days that we have nowadays, yimot haMashiach, we're not going to have them anymore. V'lo od. Not only will we not have these fast days, el shehem atidim liyot yamim tovim v'yimei sason v'simcha. All of these fast days, Shavuot B'Tammuz, etc., they're not only not going to be fast days; they're going to be days of simcha. Shne'emar, kol amar Hashem tzvakot, tzom arvi, v'tzom achamishi, v'tzom ashvi, v'tzom asvi. Yeah. Lebeit Yehuda, lishasonu lishimcha, lemoadim tovim, etc. Now the question is, what about Ta'anit Esther? Are we going to still have Ta'anit Esther b'yimot haMashiach? I don't know. If we say Ta'anit Esther is like all the other fast days, then we look at the Rambam and we'd have to say that, no. But perhaps, if Ta'anit Esther doesn't follow the framework of a classic fast day, if Ta'anit Esther is not a day of tzar, not a day of pain and sorrow, if Ta'anit Esther has a certain element of simcha woven in, then perhaps we will still celebrate it b'yimot haMashiach. So let's take a look at number 20, where the Rambam discusses the days of Purim. This is Rambam Hilchot Megillah v'Chanukah Perek Bet Halacha Yudchet. This is what he says: Kol Sifrei Neviim Mechol Ketuvim Atidim Libatel Yimot haMashiach. All of the Neviim, all the Ketuvim, we're not going to have them anymore b'yimot haMashiach. Chutz MiMegillat Esther. הרי היא קיימת בחמישה חומשי תורה ובהלכות של תורה שבעל פה, שאינן בטלים לעולם. פורים, מגילת אסתר, that is a day that will always be a part of our mitzvot. ואף על פי שכל זיכרון הצרות יבטל, even though any recollection of our tzarot will be out, שנאמר, כי נשכחו הצרות הראשונות וכי נסתרו מעיניי, ימי, הפורים לא יבטלו. The days of Purim will not be batel. Now we could say the days of Purim would be Shushan Purim and Purim, but right there, the Rambam told us the second line, if afal pisha kol zichron atzrot yibatel, even though all days of Tzara will be batel, but then he goes on to say the days of Purim won't be. So one could suggest, that I saw this in an article, I think by Rabbi Moshe Tarragon of Gush, one could suggest, based upon this Rambam, that Ta'anit Esther will still be celebrated, I don't know if that's the right word, will still be in play, b'imot HaMashiach. Because again, Ta'anit Esther very well might not be a day of tzar, a day of pain. It's a commemoration of the man in a hole, a commemoration of the ups and downs that we experience as Jewish people. And we know that if there's no down, there's no drama, there's no feeling of the up. So that's what we can possibly suggest about Ta'anit Esther, that it's a day remembering, yes, the pain and sorrow, and yes, the day of tshuva, but more of the dramatic turnaround in the holiday of Purim. Okay, so that's that brings to a close the discussion of Ta'anit Esther. So again, so far we discussed Parshat Zachor, and we discussed Ta'anit Esther. Any questions on the Ta'anit Esther discussion? Right, so the focus would be, I'm not saying it's not about Tzar at all, but I think the focus could very well be more about the Simcha. So we're celebrating the Tzar just to like highlight the Simcha, the down to the up, to accentuate the happiness and the joy. It's like a Sudat HaHoda'ah. So you discuss, someone has Sudat, someone's very sick, Rahman al-Atslan. So you have a Sudat HaHoda'ah, so at the Sudat HaHoda'ah, we don't cry about the sickness, we celebrate the recovery. So Ta'anit Esther could very well be in that type of framework. So we're recalling what happened, but more of a, and again, I'm not saying it's not a day of tshuva, it's not a day, but I think it's definitely woven within the day, a certain element of simcha and happiness. Okay. We have 11 minutes left, so let's discuss, we'll try to discuss this with as much depth as possible. We'll see what time allows us for. Okay, so the last thing I want to discuss is the minhag of machatzit shekel. There's a minhag, a very old minhag atik, to give machatzit shekel right before Purim. Many congregations have the minhag to give it right before mincha of Erev Purim, and let's see where that comes from. So really, it comes from Parsha Kitisa, which we read this last Shabbos in the Maftir. By Deber Hashem and Moshe Limor, Kitisa Rosh Bnei Yisrael of Kudehem. So Moshe was taking the census. When you're going to count the Jews, if not new each kofar nafshal Hashem. So as part of the census, each person would give a kofar nefesh. Would give something as a form of kapara. We'll get there in just a moment. When the Jews would be counted, we're nervous to count people. We know we do a shiat at Amecha. We don't count people 1, 2, 3, 4. So they'd give a coin, they'd give something in place of the counting the individual in order for to not have like an ayin hara. So what should you give? Everyone who is crossing through the census, they should give half a shekel. Each person would give a machatit shekel as they're being counted. Every person, every male, 20 years and up, would give the machatzit of the shekel. So based upon these psukim, the halacha, in the times of the Beit HaMikdash, everyone would give money. There'd be like a yearly tax around Adar time to give money to Beit HaMikdash for the korbanot, for the korbanot that we brought in the Beit HaMikdash. Seder, yafet. Now we know when there's no Beit HaMikdash, and then we don't have money to give to Beit HaMikdash. There's no korbanot to be brought, so we don't really have the chiyuv, the obligation to give machatzit of the shekel today. It's interesting to note, number 22 and number 23, which we don't have time to really go into right now, that in the days of Nehemiah, when they came after Bayit Sheni, they reinstituted this halacha, even added a little bit more onto it, that that is something that repeated itself after Bayit Rishon. So we see there's a very old, there's an obligation in the times of the Beit HaMikdash to give money on a yearly basis, a yearly tax for the upkeep of the Beit HaMikdash and for the korbanot, and that's something that we have a minhag to do even today. Look at number 24, the Ramah says, Yesh omrim sheyesh liten kodem purim machatzit min hamatbea kavua ba'oto makom. There is some people say that one should give money before Purim as tzedakah, zecher lemachatzit ha-shekel shayu nodnim ba'adar, to remind us of the machatzit ha-shekel that we gave during Adar. And the time, again, time is the Beit HaMikdash. We would give machatzit ha-shekel for the upkeep of the Beit HaMikdash and for the korban. No, so we should, Ramah says we should give it today as a zikaron, to remind us of what we used to do in the time of the Beit HaMikdash. Okay. So we're going to discuss a couple brief points in terms of the machatzit ha-shekel. We're going to discuss who should give, what to give, and to whom one should give. So in terms of who should give, so if we look at the Pesukim, look at number 25, the Pesuk tells us very clearly, Kol ha'uvir l'ha'pekudim mi'ben esrim shana v'mala. The Pesuk that we saw originally, which discusses the obligation of giving the machatzit ha-shekel, tells us that it is males 20 years up and older, 20 years and up. So one could stop right here and say that who should be giving the machatzit ha-shekel? Men who are 20 and up. Okay. That's what the Ramah writes, number 26. V'ein chayav litno rak mi shehu mi ben esrim shana v'mala. Who should be giving machatzit ha-shekel? Only, who should be giving, who's chayav? Only someone who's 20 years or older. However, the minhag has developed way beyond that. If you look at number 27, the Mishnah Berurah says as follows, that this idea of giving machatzit ha-shekel only from someone who's 20 and older, zehu ladat rovad mi bar tanur. Again, we're number 27 at the bottom of the third page. Zehu ledat Rabbi Elazar Rabbi mi bar tanura, aval atosfot yom tov katav, shaposkim chokim. Not everyone agrees with this. Not everyone agrees that the machatzit ha-shekel is limited to someone who was 20 years and up. The sphere lay that really, who should be giving to me ben yud gimel v'mala? Anyone who's bar mitzvah, anyone 13 years or old, they should be giving machatzit ha-shekel. Again, erev Purim, shu bichlal ish, because they're a man already. So chayav machatzit ha-shekel. So we've expanded it a bit. We started off looking at the Pasuk and the Ramah, who says only someone who's 20 years, only a male 20 years and older should be giving machatzit ha-shekel. And comes the Mishnah Berurah quoting the Tosfos Yom Tov, that even someone who's 13, a 13-year-old boy and older should be giving machatzit ha-shekel. And then in the second line, the Mishnah Berurah continues and says, V'el yirabba katav d'chol zeh rak midina. That fine, that's halachically. Halachically speaking, probably a 13-year-old and up should be giving. Aval minhag who, but our minhag has developed further. Litenafilu b'ad banav ktanim. That one should give machatzit ha-shekel even for his little kids, his little children, his little sons. Banav ktanim. And then he says something else, which is famous, which I think is very cool. Vishami uberet, and a woman who's pregnant, her husband should give machatzit ha-shekel b'ad vlada for her child, who very well might be a male. So, if a woman who's pregnant might have a male child. So the male child, we shouldn't leave him out of the obligation of machatzit ha-shekel. So the husband should give machatzit ha-shekel for the child who very well might be a male. We'll find out. We don't know, but give machatzit ha-shekel anyways. Okay, so what we see here, according to the Mishnah Berurah, so we started off with 20 years and up, then we added to 13 years and up, then we added really any male, and then we added even someone who we don't know might be a male, might not be a male. Someone who's pregnant, give machatzit ha-shekel for the... It reminds me of the minhag of kaparos, that when people do kaparos with a chicken. So if someone is pregnant, so there's a minhag do kaparos with two chickens, because who knows, male, female, two. Okay, not for now. Anyways, the question is, what about women? Should women be giving machatzit ha-shekel? So the Kaf HaChaim. Kaf HaChaim, one of the great Sephardic poskim, he suggests that women should give machatzit ha-shekel. Not that they should, he says, why not? He says, if we look back to our original psukim, when we discussed the reason why they gave machatzit ha-shekel in the midbar as part of the census, is it's a kapara. It brings a certain element of forgiveness for something. Kofar nafsho, give machatzit ha-shekel for kapara. So says the Kaf HaChaim, everyone wants kapara. Why should we leave women out of the opportunity to be kapara? It's a minhag. Why not? So I don't know. I'm curious. I don't know if most people give. I think I give for my wife. I think she tells me every year to give. I think so. I'll tell you in a couple of days. Do we give? I'm just curious. Most people give. Women give. Don't give machatzit. People. Okay. Sounds like that's the minhag that's developed. So in terms of who should give, looking at the pesukim only, it should be given by 20-year-old male and up, and then we've expanded it significantly. Okay. When to give? So really, the truth is, anytime during Adar is a good time to give, if it's for Nisan, for the Beit HaMikdash, but the minhag has developed to give the machatzit ha-shekel, that Mahariel points out in number 28, v'mincha kishochim lebeit Knesset, when you're going to go to shul, erev Purim, the mincha of Tanit Esther, v'notnim machatzit ha-shekel ma'ut Purim, that's when you give machatzit ha-shekel, that's how the minhag has developed, and that's what the Mishnah Berurah says as well. he says in number 29, V'achshav no'agim b'tin machzid shekel kodem mincha u'b'shachrit ma'ot megillah. So you give, the minhag has developed to give the machzid shekel before mincha on Erev Purim, and anyone who's been to shul on Erev Purim for mincha, you see those all those boxes, the cardboard boxes of every mosad, every place is up there in the bima, and always like to watch the gabayim, like 2 minutes before permar, like sweeping them off the bima to make room for the kriyat ha-megillah. And that's where that minha comes from, to give it on Erev Purim. And the last, well, two more issues, which were, Baruch Hashem, looks like we're okay with time, is what to give, what to give. So the Rama writes in number 30, because again, they gave the machzid shekel in those days. So what's our equivalent? What should we be giving today? So the Rama writes in number 30, U'me'achar she'shlosha pamim katuv truma b'parsha. So in the parsha of Kitisa, which we read before, the word truma showed up three times. It says, yesh li ten gimel, we should give three machzid shekel. V'yesh li no b'leil purim kodem shebit palim mincha, as we saw, we should give it erev purim. And that's our minhag. Yeshitin gimel chatzaim gedolim b'medinot elu. We give the largest of the half denomination. Because that is how we would define machatzit. So in America, we give like those half dollar, and the silver half dollar. That's machatzit. That's shekel. It's half of the largest half we have of a currency. So in Israel, you can certainly fulfill the chiyuv according to Rama by giving three half shekels. And many people do that. You take three of those nice half shekel pieces. That's literally half a shekel. Three of those, three machzid shekel, and you fulfilled your minhag. However, the Kaf HaChaim, who we mentioned before, he makes a different suggestion, which many people do. He says, you know what we should do? We should see how much a chatzi shekel of silver, that was the coin, how much a chatzi shekel of silver is worth. So he says that a chatzi shekel of silver, he says it's worth three dirham. I don't know what three dirham is, but the later poskim say that three dirham equal 9 grams of silver. 9 grams of silver is three dirham. So a chetzi shekel is worth 9 grams of silver. So I Googled it. How much is each gram of silver worth today? It apparently went down. It was like 101. It was $1.10 a while ago. Now it's down to 50 cents a gram. So if you invested in silver, maybe look other places to invest. Or maybe now the time to buy. I don't know. That 1 gram of silver today is worth 50 cents. So 0.50 times 9 is $4.50. So it sounds like the current value of the machzid shekel is $4.50, or in shekelim, about 16 shekels. So many people suggest you should give 16 shekels to fulfill the... You fulfill it if you give 3 half shekels, you fulfill it for 3 half dollars. But maybe you want to be a little more mahadrin, than a mahadrin, than a mahadrin, so you can give 16 shekels. Now what a lot of shuls do, at least in my shul, and I've seen it in a number of other places as well, in the shul's machzid shekel box, they'll put actual silver coins worth that amount of money. They have the actual 9 grams of silver in the shul's tzedakah box, that box open there. And what many people do is that they'll give their 16 shekels, or they'll give their 17 shekels, and they'll put it into that box, and they'll like almost buy that 9 gram of silver 3 shekel pieces, and then they'll give it back in. So they're really giving machatzit shekel, those 3 half shekels, each one worth 9 grams, 3 dirham, 16 shekels. So that's if you really want to be mekayem the mitzvah, machzid shekel b'shleimuta, that's the way you should do it. So you have like, you know, someone who's blessed with a lot of children and a wife and everyone's pregnant, who knows. So you come in there with, I don't know, you drop in a lot of money, 1, 2, 3, 4, and that's the way to be mekayem the mitzvah, machzid shekel b'shleimuta. And the last is just before we end, who should the money be given to? There is a minhag to give machzid shekel specifically to your Beit Knesset. You give your Beit Knesset that reminds us of machzid shekel to give to the shul. It's nice if you do. However, the Aruch HaShulchan points out, number 32, you don't have to do that. It says, V'yicholim, in number 32, Yicholim, Yitain Ma'od Machzid Shekel, Le'ezeh Makom Shirtzu, V'lav Dafka Le'tikun Beit HaKnesset. You can really give it to whoever you want. It doesn't necessarily have to be something connected with your Beit Knesset. Anyone who is a needy person, you can feel free to give the Machzid Shekel to. So thank you very much for your time. I just want to bless us all. Be'ezrat Hashem, this year already, we'll be Zoche to have Parshat Para. We'll be Zoche to sprinkle ourselves the Mei Para, to be Tahor, give the machzid shekel b'ezrat Hashem, so we can see the binyan Beit HaMikdash from here b'yameinu. Thank you very much. Chodesh Tov, and have a great Purim. Thank you so much.